everybody. It's your old pal, the Moo Cow here, also known as Pauly Presenza, and welcome to another episode of Indie Film Cafe. And with us tonight, from all the way out in sunny California, we have...
Jonathan A. Moody.
Yay! And joining us also is, from sunny Indiana, we have...
Rebecca J. Reinhardt.
Well, I guess, yeah, everybody's using their middle names here.
Yeah.
Outstanding. I don't know if it's sunny in Indiana or not, but I figured I had to say something.
It is humid as hell. We've gotten gotten some of the rain from the hurricane stuff.
Already. Wow. Yeah, we're going to get that Saturday. We're supposed to get a lot of rain.
Yep, we are too. We're going to get more, and it's going to be even more humid.
Well, you better batten down the hot tub, my friend.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I just found out that you and Sam have the same hot tub.
Yes.
Nice.
Yes.
I gave her advice on hers. Oh, but okay. Hers is under a closed, like not a closed thing, but she has some sort of like awning or whatever, so she could use hers a little bit earlier this season than I could.
Trust me, I'm jealous. So jealous. I want one right now.
Yeah, we both live in an apartment complex, is me and Paul, so it's a little harder. You can't really just put it out there, you know, like I don't think that.
Well, I don't have an apartment complex. I'm in a condo. It's just that, I don't have a yard for it. But anyway, we're getting sidetracked here. As we do. So today's episode, we are finally paying a visit to Strangeville, one of my favorite places in the indie movie world, which, if any of you guys know, that is the world created by the wonderful and very strange Kevin Strange of Hack Movies. And he sort of creates this odd, strange universe, and all of his movies are set there. So there's a lot of the same characters, a lot of the same places, et cetera, et cetera. And this particular film is called Stiff Jobs, and it's from 2009. And it's just a smidge over an hour long, so we figured we'd also do a short film at the beginning of that. And, Butthash, I believe.
Butthash!
Which was Rebecca's suggestion,
Rebecca came through with the short.
Yeah, we were wondering which one to do, and Rebecca was like, Butthash is there now.
Butthash is 11 minutes. Come on.
Paul didn't have it, but thankfully YouTube did.
And you said that you were really intrigued by it. I'm like, well, is it the butt part or is it the hash part?
Or both. It was both.
You know, there you go.
Just the
Fair
combination
enough.
Of putting them together. You know.
Well, this will be a very interesting discussion. This is certainly not a movie that I would have shown just Jen or Lenore or, frankly, a lot of other of my friends. So this should promote a very interesting show tonight. So let's listen to a little bit of music and we'll come right back. All right, so we are back. Okay, guys, first impressions, Stiff Jobs. What did you guys think?
Wait. I thought we were going to go with the short first.
Oh, yeah, that's right. You have corrected me.
I have corrected you.
Let's go with first impressions of Butthash.
Yes.
What do you guys think of Butthash?
I want to hear Rebecca's, because she was the one who like brought it up.
That's true. Blame Rebecca.
So I will admit that I had no idea of. I could see why Kevin Strange's work passed me by, because in like 2009, 2010, most of my disposable income was going towards my child. But I have no idea how the man has passed me by, because I like look on Facebook, we have like 250 mutual friends. So I hit him up, because I always like doing that when I'm like watching an indie film, you know. And you guys know I run a podcast devoted to shot on video. And as soon as I turn this on, I'm like, holy hell, this is shot on video. So that was the first thing I asked. I'm like, you didn't fake it, right? Like, cause you know, some people can try to like, you know, cheat the SOV look or whatever. So I started talking to him. I was intrigued by the whole Strangeville thing. And the whole idea of, you know, I had just shot at my house, actually, the day that I watched this, I had shot a scene for Holy Shit Man, where we sprayed chocolate pudding and brownie mix. Well, it was supposed to just go on a person, and it ended up going all over my walls and my ceiling and everything. So, like, as all the stuff is, like, coming out on, like, you know, I was, like, having some PTSD, like, because I'd spent hours, like, wiping up chocolate shit all over my house. But I thought it was amusing. I mean, I, you know, we'll say some more about, like, these characters and kind of how they obviously are, like, part of this world that I am unfamiliar with. So I can't speak too much to that. I'm really curious to see what Paul has to say with some of that stuff. But
well, of course, this kind of silly, juvenile, ridiculous humor is right up my dark, scary alley, especially when there are fluids of flying of all different types. Yeah, I hadn't actually seen Butthash before. I always kind of would check out his films. I had most of his movies, but I hadn't really watched like every single short. So this was new, and I didn't even know that it came on the DVD. So it was kind of fun to see that. And as it turns out, Thaddeus Starbuckle, who plays Wolfram Hart in Stiff Jobs, actually wrote this. So I think it was kind of one of those things where he's like, you know, Kevin, I got an idea for this strange, crazy, ridiculous, disgusting skit. Let's do it. And he probably explained it to him. And Kevin was like, hell yeah, let's do it. This is gross and disgusting.
You bring the brownie mix, I'll bring the Mountain Dew.
With Nixon and Hogan, who are two characters that frequently pop up in Strangeville. Mm-hmm.
So let me ask you this, just to cut in. What is their primary movie? Like, I mean, what is their, like, Jay and Silent Bob, like, of the Strangeville world?
You mean Nixon and Hogan?
Nixon and Hogan, yeah.
They're similar, except, you know, further down the evolutionary scale. And for whatever reason, they just really crack me up. I don't know what it is about it, just the way they speak, the way they are just crazy. And I don't even really like a lot of 420 humor, a lot of 420 movies. They tend to be boring and the same old thing. But I think Kevin Strange is very, very good at writing for these particular characters. And if you look at some of his other films, he seems to have a really good grasp of a kind of a paired characters where they're sort of grouped together, you know, very similar to the way that Wolfram and Hart and Wingate McGillicuddy are sort of paired together in Stiff Jobs. Well, the original two for that is definitely Nixon and Hogan. Sorry, go ahead.
So, Jennifer. Yeah, I was asking, do they have like a flagship movie, like a movie that's like a full-length movie that's just centered around them, or are they just always kind of...
Yes, they do.
It was later on, though. It was Nixon and Hogan Smoke Christmas.
Yeah, that was the movie that, like, I think it was one of his last movies that Kevin Strange did, and it was called Nixon and Hogan Smoke Christmas, and it was like their... I guess it was their if you said it was their last movie for real, it was their like bon voyage to Strangeville into the whole thing with saying, you know, here we are, we're gonna use one big movie to actually focus on the two characters that have been prevalent, just like Wolfram and Hart and I can't even say his name.
Wingate McGillicuddy.
Yeah, that one. Which I loved. I loved him, by the way. I love him. Like, I just, the guy, and the actor who plays him is just wonderful.
And there's a story behind that whole thing too that we'll get to.
Yeah, and we'll get to. Well, we're still talking Butthash, which is
Butthash.
You know, did you think that after age 21 you would ever say a sentence like, "And we're still talking Butthash"?
Still talking Butthash.
No, I did not.
Just what's in Butthash.
What Butthash even is.
Is.
Well, I know. What's funny is Paul probably knows this. I'm very squeamish when it comes to anything kind of disgusting, you know, and everything. So the only, okay, like, I have to explain this. Like, I'm I have a lot of Kevin's movies, and it's because for a long time I was friends with him on like MySpace and Facebook and stuff. I'm actually not friends with him right now. I don't know what happened. Maybe Facebook kicked us off or something at one point or whatever.
He left a lot of social media for a while.
You know, and it might have just kicked us off or something, because sometimes it does that. If somebody's gone for a while, it might delete, you know, or something, because I don't remember ever deleting him, and I don't think he had any reason to delete me. We never got into any kind of, like, you know, whatever.
Scandal.
I don't think so. I've always been nothing but supportive of the dude, or I tried to, you know.
You stole all his Colombian smoke weed.
Yeah, that's maybe. Right. That was pretty funny in the butt hash thing. It's the fact that he never got, he bought Stiff Jobs instead. And then, you know, now he didn't have anything to watch it with, you know, or whatever, to do it with. But anyway, the point was, I was a friend, you know, I was friends with him for a while, and his, I'm not into 420 humor as much too. Like, Jay and Silent Bob is like the most, you know, I was never into Cheech and Chong. I don't really even like the Evil Bong series that much, because I just think the 420 humor is just a little not very funny. But for some reason, because he mixes it with like the talk of like all the sex stuff or whatever, it's just silly. And actually it's funny, because Paul and I, when we first met, we were talking about all the people that we knew of and liked. And we were chatting about that. And Chris Seaver and Kevin Strange were two of the people that I didn't know anybody in Virginia even knew who these people were. So the fact that me and Paul became, you know, obviously became friends and coworkers and, you know, whatever, producing partners, you know, kind of made sense in a way, because of our connections with the things that we didn't even know. But like, I don't think he knew a lot of people in Virginia even knew who these people were or whatever, you know? So
he was a Nixon and Hogan of independent film.
Yeah, exactly.
And I will say, from the very get-go of watching this and the film, that Chris Seaver is the first person that came to mind, because his Warlock Home Video movies and low budget his shirts. Yeah. Like those movies are very reminiscent and about the same time.
Right. Right. And in fact, we had kind of an argument, more of a disagreement, because I remember saying, I said, Jonathan, if you like Chris Seaver, you're going to like Kevin Strange, because he's like Chris Seaver, only more so. And you were like, well, no, I think Chris Seaver kind of goes overboard a little bit more than that. And I was like, I don't think so, my friend. And
after watching this, you're right. He goes a little bit more overboard. But, you know, I think Chris Seaver's a little bit more mainstream, I guess. But there was a lot of thing, like, I mean, I don't want to, speaking of scandal, I don't want to speak of any like thing that might be wrong, but I'm pretty sure that Chris Seaver and Kevin Strange had a little bit of a, you know, thing, because they were both selling the movies at conventions together, and they're, you know, and Kevin was actually after Chris Seaver, you know, like he started selling his stuff after Chris Seaver, because Chris Seaver had been doing it since like 91, I think, of making movies when he was like a little kid, you know, and now, you know, there's this guy, Kevin Strange, who's doing similar stuff, but going, like Paul says, more so, and going overboard on it. And yeah, maybe I was wrong then. I will take that back, because I think I hadn't watched a Kevin Strange movie in forever. And now after watching this one's already like, you know, and all the movies, I'm pretty sure, are the same, you know.
Right. Well, this one is particularly more than the other ones, but you're getting a pretty darn good flavor of pretty much most of Kevin Strange's films when you're seeing this. The thing that I like about it, well, I guess we should probably still talk about Butt Ash.
Hand in hand. I mean, we should even mention that within the short Butt Hash, they have the DVD of Stiff Jobs, and they want to watch it, and that's part of the plot. So
it's a little introduction into the film.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of a promo for the film.
Yeah. A
gross and disgusting one.
Yeah, it was like almost like a commercial for Stiff Jobs, because they were almost like saying, hey, here's Stiff Jobs. Go get this, because I got this, you know.
Right. And the basic premise is, you know, so you have this one character who I forget is sitting around with his bag of weed, and here comes Nixon and Hogan wanting to share, but they run out, So they're like, oh my goodness, we're going to want to watch this movie, but we don't have any more weed. How are we going to get high and watch this film? And so Thaddeus Starbuckle's character is like, well, I heard about a way you could get high, which is really, really, really gross and involves every other kind of bodily fluid you can possibly think of put inside a plastic jug, which they were originally supposed to huff, but they end up actually imbibing and collapsing and getting just sick.
Foaming
and
at the mouth. Foaming. And getting everything but high.
Everything yeah. but high. But B-U-T-T high.
Yeah.
But it got them all prepared to watch a hack film, so or hack movie, so there you go.
Mm-hmm.
So that's yeah. kind of the funny little 10-minute or 11-minute intro yeah. kind of short film. You know, as short films go, it's clearly it's going, it's with like a lot of Kevin Smith's film or Kevin Strange's films, it's sort of going out of its way to make sure that everybody's offended and grossed out. But it's a nice little introduction to the world if you don't know what you're headed for.
Yeah. By the way, I like that you accidentally said Kevin Smith because we were talking Jane Silent Bob, but also the View Askewniverse and you know and stuff. I think inspired a lot of these things because like was it Kevin Strange got Strangeville, Chris Seaver has BoJack Heights, and so and even we have Echo Lake. So it. Like, you know, but would we have a lot of these things? Hadn't Jane Silent Bob kind of, you know, and all that stuff, like the Red Bank world? I don't know, because they did have Marvel, and Marvel's doing it. However, it's not like Marvel has a town, you know.
No, like, I argue, and it's very strong in this, in visually and even in, like, the thanks and everything else, Tromaville.
Tromaville.
Right, right, right. True. And that I was going to say, because, you know, both Chris Seaver and Kevin Strange both ended up working with Uncle Lloyd as far as having movies distributed. I know that it didn't work out so much for Chris Seaver, but I think it worked okay, at least for this particular film, and I think also for Cockhammer, which is the follow-up for Snip Drive.
Those were on Troma?
If you get the DVD, Lloyd's doing an intro. So I think he distributed them.
Okay. I didn't know that.
I think. Yeah.
I didn't know that, but I wouldn't be surprised. Troma will put out anything that's been filmed, you know, as long as you're aware.
Except Actium Maximus. Well, they did do Actium Maximus.
Yes, I thought that's why we did it, was because it was
a Troma
movie.
Is. It is.
That's even the only reason Maximus. I watched it, you know. It's a crap movie. You don't, man, you should do that. You should have Rebecca on. A Patreon only movie.
I would
of
love
watching
it.
Actium Maximus, because it's like it is by far like my least favorite movie. Like actually that and Barn of the Blood Llama are my two least favorite movies we've ever done.
I'm dying to show her Fungicide. Frankly, I think she'd get a kick
out
of that.
That's cute.
That sounds good.
Yeah, Fungicide is a cute movie.
It's a fun movie. And and of course, always, like I'm always trying to show people, I always want to show Roller Gator because it's just one of my absolute favorite films.
Hello, SOV right there. I love Roller Gator.
Roller Gator.
Yes.
Yes, that's another Donald G. Jackson classic. You know,
absolutely, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. We got to do Rollerblade, though, at some point.
Yes. Well, Stiff Jobs, and I guess we can transition to this film now. Stiff Jobs is up there as far as one of my favorite indie films that I love to show. Now, I don't show it to everybody because this is not the kind of film you can get away with showing a lot of your friends, and which is why I love the fact that we found Miss Rebecca here, who it seems that she's kind of seen it all, done it all, nothing phases her. But again, I don't want to speak for her, so... Let's talk a little bit about some of the stuff that happens in Stiff Jobs. Rebecca, what did you think?
So this is, okay, I'm going to rehash what you guys said. I'm not really very
rebut-hash.
I'm not really into like stoner comedy. Sometimes I like it, sometimes I don't. I think butt-hash was definitely like very heavy on the stoner comedy because they sat there and they smoked like a quart bag of weed. But this one didn't have quite as much. it was a lot of dialogue, a lot of just the characters just kind of bantering with each other, not as much plot. And I will say that there were times where I kind of like just kind of faded off. I was like, and it's not because I get offended by anything or whatever. Like I told you, I mean, I've been location scouting for holy shit, man, all day, you know, like I'm good with like poo and piss and, you know, bad jokes and whatever. Yeah. I'm good with all that stuff. But I found like, sometimes I felt like they kind of grabbed a joke and held on to it for too long. And that is one of the cornerstones of stoner comedy, because there are two things that would have made this movie better for me. One, to watch it with a group of people, for sure.
Definitely.
Two is a big old fucking bag of weed. You know, like there are some things in this that like carry on for a little bit longer, and you could see like a bunch of stone guys like just laughing their asses off through the whole thing. And you know, so I guess it was, I found it amusing. I found it funny. I did not find it as, I personally prefer the Chris Seaver movies. And we inevitably made that comparison. And just for the record, we all made it like independently, because obviously I had that without even saying anything to you guys.
Right.
But no, I mean, I liked it. I like, and y'all know Wolf from Heart. Do you know where that comes from?
Yes.
Oh, yeah. Angel.
Yep.
Angel Investigation. Yeah.
Yes. I was like, oh my God. Like, you know, I mean, what a random reference too, because most people would make like a Buffy reference, but they make one to Angel. So that kind of like got like bonus points for me right there.
Right. So yeah. Now the fun thing, an interesting story behind this particular film is that this was originally supposed to be like another short. And it was supposed to be a short that was going to connect and start off Cockhammer. Cockhammer was the main movie. But as they sort of got into it, I guess Kevin Strange decided, hey, these characters are fun. Let's end up doing their own film. And so that's what he ended up doing. He ended up crafting this film for these particular characters and just kind of went with it. And I know what you mean. It's like, two-thirds of the movie, everything kind of clicks along at a nice pace and gets along. And then it's like the last third when Cockhammer kind of comes in and introduces himself, which is necessary to connect it to the next film. But it seems to lose a little steam. It seems to get a little bogged down.
I'll say it went halfway through the movie. I think like 30 minutes in. Like you said that this was supposed to be a short. It feels like it should have been a short. I feel like they spent way too much time in Strangeville Cafe, you know, just chit-chatting about stuff. And I agree with like the jokes going too long, like the mother talking for like, you know, like it was a funny bit. I was like laughing. Then she goes back some more and I'm like, dude, just hang the fucking phone up. I get it. It's funny because they keep going and keep going. It's kind of like, if you know what it felt like? Family Guy, you know, where they do that joke, right?
And that's and that's what I was going to say. This is how I feel about South Park. Like South Park takes a joke and they hang on to it. And there are some episodes where it's absolutely hilarious for the entire 22 minutes. They can't say fish sticks enough in that one episode for me.
Or shit.
Yes.
Like when they say shit the whole time, at the, right. You know, like, and they're just trying to get away with saying it.
But then there are other ones where it's like halfway through, you're like, man, this joke was not strong enough for an entire episode.
Yeah.
And that's kind of
the mother one, I think it definitely, the mother bit. I thought it had some really funny bits, and then all of a sudden she just kept going, and I was just.
And they did bring it back later with the uncle talking about the mom.
Funny as hell.
That made the mom insert. Like, it made it worth it for me.
Yeah.
Right. And it's funny because if you look at the other films of his, they're mostly sort of horror-oriented, you know, and there's a little bit more violence, a little more stuff going on. This was clearly written to be more of a comedy. You know, there's other stuff in there, too. There's the drug stuff, and then there's the violence stuff and everything. And the thing about the hitman, and there's a little bit with Papa McShango and the Dark Mage Diary and all that kind of stuff. But this is primarily a comedy, and it's a gross out comedy. It's a 420 comedy, and it's a buddy comedy. And it's going to be one of those things. It's like the shotgun effect. You know, a lot of these jokes are going to hit, but there's going to be some that just miss, you know, miss the mark.
Right.
And that's kind of where it is.
But one of the charms of this, and this is again, like indie film, I will say every time, indie film's not for everybody. And even it's not for every indie film buff because it is so niche. It's like, it's all of us expressing how we feel or what we think without using like the boundaries that most movies use to keep it kind of entertaining for the masses. And so I don't walk into any of these movies thinking I'm going to be like 100% like floored with any of them. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't mean that I don't like the movie or I don't get where they're coming from. This had a very strong feeling of these people did probably a lot of ad lib. There was probably a lot of laughter on the set. It was probably a really good time. And that really shows through in this, mm-hmm. I think. So even when the jokes fail, you can tell sometimes it's like they're just joking with each other in their little inside joke that maybe we don't get.
Sure, yeah. Sure. So I guess I could talk a little bit about the folks who were involved. As I said, this is a Kevin Strange movie that was made in 2009. Kevin Strange is the man who created Hack movies. This started off with Dream Reaper back in 2006. Then he did a number of shorts, including Dead Shit, which I also have, which is a lot of fun. Colonel Kill Motherfuckers in 2008, which is a lot of fun. Cockhammer came out in 2009. And then Nixon Hogan's Smoked Christmas. And then there were a couple of other shorts in between. Kevin Strange is the one who is writer and director, and he frequently acts in a lot of these films, and he's usually the guy who plays Hogan.
And he played Cockhammer.
And he played Cockhammer. Yeah. And he usually plays like somebody in a ridiculous wig or pretending to be a female. He always does these goofy bits.
And there's a lot of that in this movie, like not just him, but a lot of people wearing really bad wigs. And for some reason, that always cracks me up. I don't know why.
Guys playing girls, like them. It was really funny that the guy who plays Wolfram also played his mom.
With the mustache.
Yeah, with the mustache still. He didn't shave that off.
So and he also played the female, quote unquote, gang leader with the wrestler. He's like, "Oh, I'll eat your dick." You know, that whole thing. That's so ridiculous. And that's what I love. I love the plain up ridiculous characters. They're just a lot of fun. Mm-hmm. But then Thaddeus Starbuckle's in there. He's the main guy who plays Wolfram Hart. David Wayne Black plays Wendit McGillicuddy. So they're the two ruthless hitmen in Strangeville. Mm-hmm. Then you have Jacinto Montoya, who plays Cletus Shoat, who also plays Nixon. You got Kevin Strange, as we mentioned before. There's Vinnie Bonaducci, who plays Papa McShango. And then there's the cafe dude. I don't think I ever got his name. He's Devin Wilder.
It wasn't Bigglesworth, but it was something very similar.
Right, Biggle Farve or something.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, Biggle Farve or something like that. Yeah, like it was weird.
Yeah.
And most of these people are the same folks who play in all of Kevin Strange's movies. They're like his little group of people. Kind of like, you know, how Orson Welles has his little company of actors that he uses over and over again.
I think this will be the first and possibly last time that Kevin Strange is compared to Orson Welles.
Oh, my God. Yes. I watched, I can't even remember what movie it was. It was something we did on SOBs who love SOV, and I mean, it was like not a good movie, and I was like, I compared it to Citizen Kane because it had like the bookends. It started with the end of the movie, and I'm like, this is the first and only time that anyone will associate this with Orson Welles.
Right.
I wish that he had done something like Citizen Strange. How awesome would that have been? But anyway, so he uses the same folks over and over, and it's clearly their friends and family and people like that, and that's what Hack Movies is all about. I will say that the one guy who does appear in a lot of these films, who appears in a bunch of other things, is an actor by the name of Devin Wilder. He's the guy who is, I guess, he has a wig on, and he gets he gets killed when the chick's whacking him off, and yeah. He's also in the cafe.
I'm friends with him. We were actually supposed to work together on a project back in the day, and we may still work together. He actually lives in LA, so nice. I may hang out with him at some point or whatever. We talked about, you know, chilling and everything, but Eric A. Williams was his original name, and that's what he's credited on, you know, on the DVD and everything. So when you see the movie, it says Eric A. Williams as those things, and that's now he changes. I don't know why. Don't ask me why he changed his name to Devin Wilder. Maybe he wanted to just start anew or something, but everybody knows, like, you can't change your name after you've made so many movies because like you're on IMDb.
The internet figures it out, kids. Yeah.
Right. And he's been in a lot of stuff. You know, he started off as a comedian, but he was in, you know, he was actually in the Hunger TV series back in 2008.
Nice.
He was in Redneck Carnage in 2009, Zombie Epidemic in 2009, Pizza Delivery Massacre, which I've not seen. I want to see that.
Yeah, that sounds great.
Something called Rock and Roll Vampire. How did that one slip by me? and in a whole bunch of TV shows. He was in the Dirty 30s and Outrageous 911, Fab Life, Con Man.
I see Paul going on a Eric Williams spree right now and looking for all his movies and then buying them so that he can watch them and torture people with them.
And his filmography that you just mentioned reminded me what movie I compared to Citizen Kane, and that was Redneck Zombies.
Yes.
Oh my God.
Yes.
I actually interviewed I'm still friends with Pericles, who worked
Pericles
on that.
Pericles Lunas.
Nice. Yeah,
and I love that guy. Like, he's such one of the nicest guys in show business, you know, independent show business. So I love him.
So as far as Kevin Strange goes, he was doing hack movies for, you know, from 2006 to roughly 2010. And there's a story about what happened with hack movies. I know that for a while they were on Amazon and then they got pulled, and just there were people who complained. I guess they complained about, you know, how he was making his movies and some of the jokes, I guess, and some of the subject matter. And I know he really got turned off by that. I think, you know, there was issues with not getting paid when he was supposed to have gotten paid. And like most independent filmmakers, you can only go so far on congratulations and love from fans. You have to make some money when you're doing this. And he just was not getting enough money to continue to make films. And then towards 2014, unfortunately, David Wayne Black, who was also his friend and one of the guys in the company, passed away. And I think that also took a lot of wind out of his sails. I remember him talking about that. I think it was on a Facebook post or something like that. But the two things together just kind of just killed hack movies. And I remember for a while he was kind of like just selling just to get rid of them for a while. But he's not gone away. He has gone off. He does comic books. He does all kinds of books that he writes. He's got a new card game coming out called Strangeville Smoke Weed, and it's got Nixon Hogan in there.
Aww.
He has a Cockhammer graphic novel. He's got all this stuff with Nixon and Hogan. He has Strange House books, and he's actually won. He's a two-time nominee of the Wonderland Book Award for Excellence in Bizarro Fiction, and he's the author of 18 books. So he's kind of gone on and done a lot of stuff. He has his own website now that sort of has all his stuff sort of right there. So you can get movies from there, and you can get his graphic novels and his books. So he's kind of gone on. Now, apparently there was some other stuff that also went on, I guess, in the indie book community too, where he kind of got, you know, on the outs with these people there, because he's somewhat controversial. It's the way he is. But he's still plugging away, and I'm really hoping I get a chance to interview him on Spotlight, on Indie Film Cafe Spotlight. I think that'd be fun.
That'd be great. That'd be fantastic. let me know when you do, and we'll promote it completely.
Yeah, that'd be fun.
Yeah.
He seemed like a really cool dude. I mean, he was really gracious when I, like, just messaged him out of the blue, you know?
Right.
He didn't know me from Adam, you know, so.
That's cool.
He'd be fun to talk to.
Yeah, he's very, I mean, and I believe he's very humble about, like, who he is and what he's done, you know, but, like, you might be right, Paul. Like, a lot of what he what he does is controversial enough where like people will complain and it'll get things taken off. Like you complain about things enough, people will get you in trouble. So, like if I were him, I mean, some of the stuff I would do, I would start kind of changing up a little bit, but if he doesn't want to do that, then, you know, like he's going to just accept
I don't think he's the type who's going to change, especially when it comes to public pressure or, you know, from anybody from the outside saying, you know, you really should stop doing X, Y, and Z. I think that's, he's the type that's going to make him do it even more.
Right.
You know, that's
but
the way
then again,
is.
You can't, you know, kind of in a way, if you're going to be that way, you got to stay that way and you got to say, well, screw them. I'm still going to make my movies. if you're leaving because of that, I mean, you know what I mean? Like, I feel like he's just kind of letting them win in a way. And I feel like he should.
In a way, maybe, but it's, you know, I can't speak for him. So at some point, that's one of the reasons why I want to interview him and talk to him about it and have it come from him.
Well, and like all the things that Paul said, I mean, that was the first thing that I noticed when I got on his Facebook page. I mean, he's actively like promoting stuff that he's working on now, just not movies. He just switched gears to a different format.
Right.
And he's kept that whole world alive. He's just doing a different, you know, platform. So
I thought you would find that very interesting, Moody, because we talked about doing different things and games and comic books and all that,
you
too.
Know, and I know, and I love that, but I would love for him to continue doing the movies, too. Like, you know, not just give up on that because, you know, things got hard in a way. Like, even though he has moved on to other stuff, I would still love to see him do this stuff, you know, to do films. Because
another thing could be too that like the band, you know, broke up. Right. Like if he doesn't have access to all those people, it may not be like the same magic to get other people together. And I get that.
And he is able to keep the magic alive with comic books and books with the characters, even though, you know, because if he does comic books, all he has to do is draw them. They don't have to actually be there when he draws, you know? So, like, I get that. No, I totally do. And, I mean, hopefully, maybe people will start kind of getting him to want to, like, be interested in film. Some people just leave film, you know?
Yeah.
It breaks my heart, but it's, you know, it's people's choices. Like I interviewed the girl from Mrs. Doubtfire, the like oldest daughter, you know, and she had left Hollywood, you know, years ago, you know, like 2002 or something. And she had left it because she just wasn't interested in it anymore. You know, she just didn't, she enjoyed it when she was a kid. She grew up and then she was like, I don't want to do this anymore. And you know what? I mean, more power to you, but it sucks when I'm like, oh man, I would love to see that person in a movie, or I'd love to see that person do another movie, because like, you know, like, I don't know, I'm one of those people like new.
Sure, stuff. Sure. No, I understand.
You're being greedy as a fan.
Exactly.
Essentially.
But it's okay. I could be selfish as a fan.
Yeah.
The elephant in the room that we haven't really discussed is what the movie is actually kind of about. Right. So, and again, it's a little bit controversial. Basically, you've got these two hitmen, okay, we mentioned them. It's Wolfram Hart and Wingate McGillicuddy, who are the ruthless, you know, hitmen in Strangeville. And they kind of go from one client to another, killing everybody. And in between, they have this juvenile, grotesque, disgusting banter about some of the most, you know, horrible subjects you can possibly think of. It's all very misogynistic and juvenile and silly. It's also kind of fun. And, you know, even though you may not particularly love what they're saying, the characters are very consistent. They find their voices, they stick with it, and they kind of go with it, and they just move. And from one ridiculous character that they run into, you know, the people that they kill are all ridiculous. The Pablo McShango is ridiculous. Cockhammer is ridiculous. All these other extra people who kind of come in and out are ridiculous characters, and they're just a lot of fun.
Do you know what this is a gross out version of?
What?
Pulp Fiction.
Ah. Yes, and that was the other thing too. The diner is clearly a Tarantino thing, and there, and that is one of my pet peeves, shall I say. that when I feel like a movie is really trying to like Pulp Fiction it up. Uh-oh. Because
wait till we do Supernatural Assassins, because there's an Echo Lake Cafe.
That's right.
But the whole idea of that, like, you know, that was lightning in a bottle. Like, these people randomly talking about the most esoteric things in a diner.
Oh, yeah.
You know, like, and for a long time, like Reservoir Dogs, really. Mm. You know, like, that kind of thing. I think a lot of people have tried to recreate that, but they didn't have, like, the interesting banter.
Right.
Consistently. Right. Maybe they had 2-3 minutes of the good banter, but they can't keep it going for 10 minutes like Tarantino.
And certainly we're not getting any esoteric discussion here. I mean, this was like, you know, cum guzzling and crazy, ridiculous nonsense.
This is about what nationality gives the best blowjob.
Yep, exactly.
Essentially, it's broken into chapters, and at the beginning of every chapter, it's basically one of them arguing a different nationality.
Right.
And that's kind of an interesting thing. But, like, once again, the chapter part is Quentin Tarantino. Quentin Tarantino does chapters for almost every one of his movies.
And,
now,
you know, we get into things like tranny porn and septuagenarian sex and, you know, hoes down in Mexico and weird stiletto wearing shit, or kitten stomping videos and batshit tea and just... Yeah, every kind of crazy thing you can think of, and he just goes there, basically.
Oh, wait. Even if they didn't plan this, but there was a dead person in the back seat of the car. Come on. Pulp Fiction. There's a dead man in the back of the car. It's just like so many different things. Like it's obviously they love Pulp Fiction or whatever. They're like giving a little bit of a parody of it and, you know, slash homage to it, you know, but it, you know, it was a Kevin Strange movie, you know, thing, but Tarantino has his own little like universe too. So like all these guys, you know, I mean, obviously it's an honor for somebody to love something so much that they sort of mimic it or, you know, kind of poke fun of it. So, you know, Tarantino should have watched this movie at some point.
Yeah, that would have been fun. Saying.
Probably has.
He's watched a lot of stuff, man.
Yeah. He lauds some really, really random movies.
Yeah.
Well, it's funny because I was watching, we just did for Criterion Watch with Joe, we did Lady Snowblood, which Quentin Tarantino loved, and what he based a lot of Kill Bill on. So you have to check that out.
Well, can't wait, you know. Yeah. That'll be next month's Criteria Watch, right? Yeah, September. So get ready for that.
But at least as far as this particular film goes, like I said, it will definitely go there. And as far as the crafting goes, you know, I didn't see any real problems. You know, I didn't really see like, you know, continuity problems, or the acting kind of ranged. Some of it didn't look particularly good, but I think some of it was sort of done like that on purpose. Like, I think at least David Wayne Black, I think, is just a very deadpan actor and just doesn't really alter the way he speaks. I think he's doing that for that character. I kind of liked it, too,
to be honest. I mean, it didn't bother me. Like, sometimes there's some, like, I'll give you an example. I watched, for Criteria Watch, we just watched Blood Simple for this one. And John Getz is so monotone in that movie that it just bothers me. Like, it gets to the point where I'm like, does this guy have any, you can't feel any emotion from this guy's character. And I'm like, I didn't like his character in it or whatever, but I love the movie. The movie is great. However, what's his name? McGillicuddy or whatever his character's name is. It just felt like that was perfect. Like, the way he said everything was just like, it was his character completely. Like, I felt like John Getz just didn't do a good job, you know, because he's a great actor, you know, and I think that was one of his first feature roles, but I just think he phoned it in that movie. However, in this McGillicuddy was wonderful.
Yeah, I think they were both very well, very comfortable together.
Yeah, and I think it was on purpose. Like, he's the guy who doesn't let anything get to him, either good or bad. And then the other guy, Wolfram, he's just like he's just like up and down and off the charts, and just like his right. high blood pressure is like, you know, bubbling.
Right, right.
You know, so they kind of play off of each other well.
And let me talk a little bit about, as far as the writing goes, I think you mentioned earlier, plot-wise, there's not a whole lot going on. This is not a very particularly dense or, you know, involved plot. It's fairly simplistic. However, I got to say this about both the writing and about the actors. These guys have some serious dialogue that they have to mention and spout yeah. out there.
Yes. I was in a single take. There's a lot of like 5-minute diatribes where the camera does not get off of the person.
And these right. guys were good. And that was a lot of stuff to
say. I mean, they didn't stumble or mess up at all. I mean, if they did, they didn't use that take. So I was that's actually something I noticed when I was like, whoa. Because, like, especially Wolfram, like...
Absolutely.
Yeah, he did such... Like, he had so much dialogue where he just had to talk and talk and talk, which, I mean, I do a lot of dialogue. I mean, there is, you know, stuff that I've written that has a lot or whatever. And, I mean, I like dialogue, you know. Some people don't. Some people rather see action, you know, or whatever. I don't mind watching because... I grew up on, you know, Kevin Smith movies, so I like a lot of just regular dialogue, but it's just a matter of taste, and that had, I mean, this was a lot.
Dialogue heavy, and it was not easy dialogue.
You know, it was very rapid fire.
Yeah, it's very rapid fire what was being said. Also, it's just not your normal dialogue at all, and he did a really good job. And I thought Kevin Strange himself as Cock Hammer also did a very, very good job.
Mm-hmm. He did, but I didn't enjoy his diatribes or rants or whatever nearly as much as I enjoyed Wolfram's.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And sometimes Wolfram's got into just like, fuck shit, cock, balls, blah, blah, blah. You know, like there was like a few times where it's like, okay, you know, let's get on with it. But still, like you said, the delivery was like masterful.
Right, right.
And even if that was completely ad-libbed and is like he just said everything, whatever, he obviously did not stumble and he got in that character.
And he was really good. Not only for that character, but he also played the uncle and he did a great job as the uncle. The uncle
was
so good.
That is my favorite part of this movie, by the way.
So talk a little bit about the uncle since you love him so much, please.
Yes. So basically, Wolfram's telling a story and it flashes back to like a fishing trip or something with his uncle, who is him. Okay. So the actor who plays Wolfram is the uncle. In a wig. And then Wolfram is a young boy, but he has on those big like aviator sunglasses wears. They're like five sizes too big. This poor little kid is hearing about how his mom, and we go back to the things that the mom has said to him, that she is like a master at sucking dick. She invented the twerk technique, which is where you cup the balls with one hand and you use some twerking with the other hand.
You know what I mean, Wingate? No, of course you don't. You're
right,
kid.
Right. Some people they express themselves with paint. Some people can draw. Some people can sing. Your mother can suck cock.
Right. Some people write poetry like sissy fucking failures. But you're not like... Jim sucks the best cock, and it was just so funny.
She is the master of that.
Oh my god!
But just the fact that, like, oh wait, what did he say? Okay, he said, yeah. So your mom is my sister, and he said, I mean, not that Red Shoe Diary stepsister shit, like real sister,
real blood on relations. Oh my god, it was so funny. Ugh. So you've got these great lines and you have somebody who knows exactly how to deliver them to the most funny effect you can possibly get. It was really great.
And the fact that it's like most people, this flashback would signify like a traumatic experience that affected them negatively, but no, with Wolfram, it pretty much shaped like who he was. And
right. It's formative for him.
Yeah, right, because that's why he doesn't like bums.
Anything. or you know, lotion, I'd say, at this point, because they use an awful lot of lotion on that poor uncle.
Oh man, yeah. Anybody who's ever been in the prop department for any low budget movie is like, yep, been there, done that.
It's gonna have to be rape. So yeah, he gets raped with a lot of fake penises and an awful lot of lotion being squirted all over him.
Yeah, basically a circle jerk on his head, and what comes on him is like mayo and maybe like some white slime, some shaving cream, some lotion.
Oh my goodness.
There's probably about five other, maybe some gelatin even all mixed in and just on this guy's head. Oh my
so that's kind of what I meant as far as like bodily fluids flying all over the place in this particular film. And that's not even like the worst ones. You know, there's all kinds of, you know, fake poo flying all over the place, which I know, Moody, you did not like.
I mean, it was obviously pudding and other, you know, and as Rebecca has pointed out before, I think is like brownie, you know, stuff and mix and stuff. And you know, whatever you can do on it. I mean, it's not my favorite thing. It's not my favorite thing, but
I think my favorite thing though on that. So this is going back a little bit is. Was that going back or going forward? I don't know. This is where he's doing the. He's doing the one chick in Tijuana, right?
Right.
Right. And this is where he gets his beautiful girlfriend Jenny.
Right.
But like he pulls out like I mean it's just like this obvious dildo, you know, it's just his cock and it's like covered in pudding. It's supposed to be shit, and they just like wipe it past her face, and she's smiling. He's like, and I brought her back here with me, and he's like, is that? Well, that's right. That's my beautiful girlfriend, Jenny.
Oh my God.
And he's a
so
cheap Tijuana whore. And he kills like four or five guys in that.
I know.
Like,
it's
how many pimps do you have?
That, see, at first I was getting annoyed by that until they made that line. Until he asked that question. Then after that, I was like, okay, that was worth.
Because the guys kept getting more and more random as they came in.
Yeah.
Funny.
Who the fuck are you? You know, every time it was like, it was almost like spaghetti sauce. Like he'd shoot him in the head. It was
right.
Sauce on the back.
One guy was like, I hate poop.
I hate poop.
So random.
See? This is why I say I should have watched this, and I knew it as I was watching it. I should have watched this with people because I'm laughing so much more rehashing the jokes. I was watching because I was like kind of watching. Like I was like with you, I'm like, really, they're gonna kill another guy. But now that I look back and we're talking about it, I'm like,
you would have.
It's definitely kind of more of a party film. A lot of 420 movies are like that too.
Yeah.
You know, especially some of the Killer like Bong movies.
Cheech and Chong is like boring as hell to sit there and watch by yourself.
Right.
But you watch that with a few friends, it's hilarious.
Yeah.
I mean,
like you said before, if you were high, you know, watching these movies, then
yeah.
you could probably get that.
You probably want some people. You probably want like a community kind of thing.
But it's problematic. Cause like I said, besides you two, maybe Gary, there's not a whole lot of people where I could sit down and then like look them in the eye later on and say, ha, was that a fun film?
Yeah, I don't think any of the people that you've lived with I know Lenore would hate it.
No, she'd watch it though. She'd be.
She'd watch it, but I think she'd watch it. Honestly, and I'm not going to lie, I would feel completely uncomfortable with some people watching this movie.
Sure.
This
movie is not something that you can just sit around and watch with certain people, you know? You have to watch it with the people that...
You know, especially these days, you know, and I don't want to get into the whole social justice warrior thing. There's pros and cons to all that, but... You know, it's just a movie. If you don't like it, you don't like it, that's fine. But you don't go to someone and say, you can't do this. Yes, they can.
I mean, this is one of those things. It's like, okay, I don't want to get on a huge soapbox, but like, you know, people want to change up Blazing Saddles. Like,
oh my God.
No. Like, that movie was, first of all, it was written by a black man.
Yeah.
So whatever, but like that movie, though you might be sensitive to it now, it's like it was funny, it was hilarious for the time, so don't get offended, because the people who should be offended were not offended. they were the ones making the jokes.
Right. Context is everything.
Everything. Yes.
Yeah. I mean, I could see we did a movie before, and I'll talk about this because I don't think Lila's going to watch this. But we did, You know, we did Zombie Cop, which, you know, I had my friend Lila on the show to host it, and she really hated Zombie Cop mainly because of some of the things like a white guy pretending to be Jamaican. She definitely would have hated this one because there was a white guy pretending to be Jamaican. And Zombie Cop, it was more, even if it was supposed to be funny, it wasn't very funny. And in this, it was over the top stupid.
Are you saying Papa McShango was white?
But there's a difference between parody and sarcasm and just plain mean-spiritedness. And that's what people can't really put their heads around anymore. Like right now, we're at this like neutral stage where we can't be, like we can't parody. Like there are certain like people who've just become completely
Humor is under attack, and it's unfortunate here. I mean, even if you don't like it, well then don't watch it. You know, you have the choice.
There's a group of people who basically want us all to like evolve into this like kind of different society than what we are right now. And we're at the same society that we've been for a while. Like, I mean, we haven't really changed that much with the way that humor is. Like, we just watched a movie that was made in 2009. It feels like it could be made in 2019. There really wasn't anything, or 2020. There wasn't anything
aside
in this
from
movie.
The VHS look.
Right.
Although,
that's coming back.
Yes, it is. My friend Maddie Deering just did a wonderful movie called Spirit Animal.
A good point that you bring up, Jonathan, and that's why, even though I get a kick out of just about all of Kevin Strange's films, this one is my particular favorite. I think it's his funniest. I love to show this to sort of give people an idea of what the Strange, you know, universe is like. And I think that it's probably this and probably Cock Camera are going to be the ones that, you know, when they talk about Kevin Strange 30 years from now, they'll be saying, oh yeah, these films, these are the two films.
How many of the Kevin Strange films do you own, Paul?
Let's see. So I have Colonel Kill Motherfuckers. I have Dead Shit. I have Cockhammer. I had this one, Stiff Jobs, and I can't find it. So the one that I used was the one that you left back in the studio. You left in the studio. Oh, so.
Well, I thank you for sending me this like YouTube version.
Yeah.
I didn't even look.
Like, somebody did this.
I would have been
and
so pissed.
I think
pissed.
Kevin Strange either did it or somebody else close to him did it, because I saw that he made a few comments on there.
This is on his channel.
Yeah, there
you
go.
In fact, go to YouTube, go to Kevin, you know, Kevin Strange. Mm. It's like, it's not even Hack Pictures. It's Kevin Strange. He has a lot of these titles that Paul's saying. He's got them up there for free on YouTube.
Okay, awesome.
Outstanding.
But yeah, it's funny because I remember you asking if I could leave Stiff Jobs because you wanted to do it for Indie Film Cafe. Do remember that. So now that you say that, I'm like, oh shit. So thank God I didn't look for it, because
send it to him via the USPS right now, or he'll
So I have those. I have Nixon and Hogan Smoke Christmas. The only thing I don't have is the first one, Dream Reaper. So at some point, if I can get my hot little hooves on that, then I'll have just about all of the Kevin Strange movies, at least anyway. At some point I'd like to get, you know, I definitely want to get the card game. That sounds really intriguing. Maybe some of these books too. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Well, I think we're at that time, you know.
Can I just say one more thing?
Sure.
Sure.
Shopping for Jesus is not like shopping for your mom.
That's true.
That song was so good.
It was.
To the point where I listened to, because they had the whole thing, they just would say that much a couple times in the movie. And then during the credits, it was like the whole thing. It was like, her robe might be worn out. You know, all this crap, like all this stuff you can get for your mom, but that you can't get for Jesus.
Yeah, well, production-wise, I thought this was a very good film as far as the way it was put together. You know, the music was good. There was no bad lighting. The sets were all really, really good. The special effects, even though they were sort of grotesque and over the top, they worked. They really did. everything really kind of worked. The lighting was good. The sound was good. I had no problems with any of the production level stuff. So I don't know what you guys thought.
I agree. Like, I feel like, I mean, the dialogue might have been a little extensive at times. And as we said, there's jokes that kind of just fell flat or whatever. Mm. But, I mean, they, like you said also, Paul, that they just kept throwing things out there to see what stuck. And it, I feel like that's a lot of, you know, like that worked for me.
Right. You know? And as far as, you know, directing style goes, you know, I think Rebecca hit it on the nail on the head, and she's mentioned SOV. It's a very SOV style of shoot. And I think it probably fits not only Kevin Strange's style, but it fits in this particular film. Mm-hmm. So
yeah, a lot of the zoom in way too close to someone's face, that kind of thing that you may think is like a quote unquote mistake, is definitely like that SOV homage kind of thing. Like I got it. I understood it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm sure he's probably watched all the same movies that we have. I know he was a big horror movie buff and he's a big wrestling buff. He loved role-playing games like me and heavy metal. So there you go. That's mm-hmm. not on the, put you on the road to hell. I don't know what is.
There you go. I think him and Chris Seaver, when to go back to that, I think that both of them were, you know, like you could watch both this movie and probably like Sex Squatch back, you know, together or something, you know, like you look at all their stuff, like they're, you know, they're the same type of shot on video or, you know, whatnot, you know.
Right. And I've mentioned before, I have this fantasy where, you know, we become like this big distributor at Sick Flick Productions, and I'm able to go to people like Chris Seaver and Kevin Strange and, you know, Todd Sheets, and just say, here's $500,000. Make a movie. Anything you want.
No, they would do.
The going rate on that. Like, I was just in an SRS movie that was funded by Ron Bonk, and that's not the budget.
I know.
Oh, I know. Still. Well, no. He's saying if he could give them like $500,000, what would they be able to do on that budget?
Right.
But the thing is, you know, I've talked to our buddy Dustin Hubbard about this. If you give Dustin Hubbard $500,000, he'd just make 500,000 movies, you know, on $1,000.
You'd have to be stipulations. You'd have to say, you know, okay, you can only pay yourself $100,000 out of that. The rest all has to go to a budget, and you have to produce an actual full movie and blah, blah, blah.
Right, and then they're going to be, just to make the movie they want to make, they're going to have to just give up so much. I mean, it's going to have to be a lobster dinner for the cast and crew every night. You know, they're going to spend the money the way that these guys do it.
Right. And I think that's the way they want to do it. And that's great, because not only could they make the movie that they wanted to do, they'd finally be able to use their own people that they love and say, here, we can actually pay you.
We can pay you.
Right.
In
right.
more than beer and Little Caesar's pizza.
Right. That, I think, is the most wonderful thing about if you were to able to do stuff like that for something, is that basically if you were able to say that, you know, because if somebody came up, like a production company came in and said, here's $500,000, they'd usually say, okay, but you have to cast the people that we want you to cast.
Right.
Have to do it the way that we want you to do it.
Right.
You can't do it the way that you want to make your movie, because there's so much more at stake when they're making their $20 movies, you know, with their best friends, you know, and everything. They can do what the fuck they want, and they can sell it, you know, at conventions, and it's wonderful. But when you're actually, like, people are investing money, they're usually expecting
right, and they're waiting points, and yeah,
right. And that's why I would love to see what some of these guys could just do with a decent sized budget. And you know, come on,
no
$500,000. Really, that's peanuts compared to like Hollywood. That's nothing.
Yeah, no, but you know, yeah, and but you ever think about it? Like, rich people don't like to give their money away because they've, you know, they've worked on it so much that they're very careful about it. So when they want it, they usually want to invest in film. A lot of times they know that there's a risk that they're not going to get their money back. You know,
right. Whatever. But the idea is that we would have five or six films that would be you know, purely created from the people that we like, they would probably be very good.
Without restraint, right. Without restraint, they didn't have to buy their effects from Spirit Halloween.
And we could distribute them. And I bet you 10 to 1 that they would be great and people would love them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They'd buy it.
We'd love them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely. So there you go. So let's get on with it. I want
to. All right. So the next thing we have to do, we have to talk about the rating system. So those of you who have been following our show, and for the benefit of those of you who have not, we do have a rating system here at Indie Film Cafe, which is a 1 to 10, by which a 1 is considered very little stink overall. A 5 is kind of in between. It's got some stink, not as bad as others. And a 10 is pretty damn stinky. It's very, very odoriferous indeed. And if you felt like being sort of subtle in your scores, you could give a half step, say a 5.5 or 7.5, depending on how you feel. And then we total up, every movie gets its stink score, which comes from 3 judges. And at the end of the year, we find out what has been the stinkiest movie of the year, an Indie Film Cafe.
I don't think it's going to be this one.
I don't think so. This was a tough year, man. We got a few serious stinkers this year.
No. I'm just saying. I'm getting ready for it, but I don't. I think this is going to be very low. You know,
I think so too.
Yeah. I mean, I already know my rating. So.
Okay. So you've done this before, Ms. Rebecca. So we're going to let you go first.
I have problems with this rating scale because, again, as we've talked about, something being stinky in our world is oftentimes something that's wonderful.
Right.
And that's what we like. Right. I think I would have liked more stinkiness in this. I think I would have liked a little bit more over the top. I want to watch
Over the top.
Yeah. No, I think I would like to watch one of his horror movies because this is like parodying, homaging a genre that's not really like my genre. Mm-hmm. And so it's hard for me to judge.
That's fair.
Too much. But I think if I watched the same style, characters, whatever, with more of a horror bend, I think I would probably be a little
You might like Dead Shit or Kill Motherfuckers. It's more of your traditional zombie.
Those might be more
up
my alley. So,
Cockhammer, maybe too, right? Wasn't that a little
Yes and no. I mean, it kind of continues along the strain or the Stiff Jobs line, you know, story wise.
So I just don't like totally know how to rate anything on the scale, but I'm going to give it like a 7.
Oh, okay. Wow. That's interesting.
Yeah. You can totally discount my score. Cause I'm like, I don't know how to score this necessarily. I would like it to be crazier. It had a lot of merit. But it's not Neil Breen and it ain't Citizen Kane. I mean,
Sure. No, I get that. Okay. What about you, Jonathan?
I would have to say I'd agree almost with Rebecca as like, I still thought like I've seen their other stuff, so I can say and I do like this subgenre of film. I like hitman movies and stuff and buddy comedy kind of thing. So I would have to give it a 5, you know, out of 10. The only thing, like, honestly, it's not, and that's almost like, I don't know. I mean, it's not, it's halfway both ways, you know.
It's a cop out is what it is, Jonathan. Yeah.
It's not great. Like, it's not the greatest film. And I actually do like some of the other ones a little bit better of all the things, if I can remember them, you know. Colonel Kill is probably one of my favorites. I really enjoy that. But after rewatching this, it was still a pretty decent, fun little flick. I mean, there's some stuff I didn't like, obviously, you know, some humor was not my kind of thing. But, you know, I don't make that, you know, like that's not, you know, I wouldn't do that, you know what I mean? Cause it's just not my style or my feel, but I, you know, Kevin, that's perfect for him. So I would give it a 5. Like, that's what I would stick with. Fair enough. What about you, Paul?
I'm going to probably go with a 4. It's got some stink, but it's not nearly as bad or as stinky as some of the other films I've seen. And there's a lot of little things in this film that I really, really like. You know, for example, I really liked towards the end when the main characters are getting are opposed by Cock Hammer, and David Wayne Black's character gets killed and then gets resurrected and ends up, you know, being used against poor Wolf from Heart.
Yeah.
And Wolf from tries to get out of it by shooting himself. So he shoots himself in the mouth and he's laying there, but he's screaming.
It hurts so bad. It hurts so fucking bad.
He can't die because Cock Hammer's gotten so powerful that he actually controls death, which is pretty damn impressive. And it's not the sort of thing you generally see anyone have to go through. Is, you know, usually you kill yourself and that's it. But oh no, not only is he still there and still alive, but he's also feeling every little bit of that bullet going through his. Yeah, that's you know, it's a nice little touch. There's, you know, lots of nice little touches in the film that I appreciate.
I did like the ending though, like the fact that, you know, it sets up for the next movie. So mm-hmm. I feel like it was kind of like you said, it was a short film that they originally wanted to make, then they made it into a feature, and you know, and it was always supposed to be sort of a setup for the next one. So I mean, you know,
and I feel like I just don't like, I feel like I just can't, I don't know, I can't dig your rating system, because I feel like I'm very similar to you guys, but like me giving, like I feel like giving it a 7.5 is giving it a higher score in my head. Like I can't get past that.
Yeah.
So you might just want to nix me up. 7.5
or 7?
I said 7.5, but I mean, like, if I guess we're going kind of more with you guys, I guess I should go like 6.5.
No.
I mean, like, if I'm trying to go with the same scale, like, it's hard for me because, like, 10 on the stinky scale is a lot of times like.
Oh yeah,
I mean,
that's what we've been putting Neil Breen.
Yes, yeah. I know, and you would say that, like, you would say a 10 for any Neil Breen movie, right?
Or because, like, the Birdemic or The Room or something.
We didn't even give a 10. We didn't all give a 10. We gave it like 9 or 8.
9.5s. It came really, really close.
Yeah.
That would be a 10 for me. Second one, I'm going to say like 8 because it didn't.
I haven't even seen it, but I've heard that.
Too intentional.
It wasn't nearly as fun.
Okay, so I am changing my score to 6.5 now that I'm like, if I put it in a Birdemic thing, Birdemic and Birdemic 2,
uh-huh.
10 versus an 8, I'm going to go a little,
So you need to like be on the show a little bit more because like then you'll start kind of getting what we're kind of going with. We're
just gonna have to have Miss Rebecca come on our show a little bit more often and show you some more stinky movies.
That's fine with me.
I like stinky movies.
Well, yay! Where have you been all my life? Why are you over there in Indiana?
Well, and that's the beauty. We've got somebody on the East Coast, the West Coast, and in the Midwest.
Yep. There you go.
No wonder we can't find anybody in our locales to watch the same movies as us, but with technology, we can connect.
The beauty of Zoom allows us to come online and talk about our love of these movies, and we get to make a podcast and send it out to everyone.
I was talking about that earlier today with Jackie, that I was actually happy that you and I, Paul, because originally we were going to, you know, we were splitting, you know, to go, I was going to go to LA and I was going to take my half, you know, or whatever, and do my stuff out here. And we did that for the first few months, you know, first 3 months, you know, we were split. And then all of a sudden Zoom came in and Paul was like, let's do it on Zoom. And I was like, well, all right.
Yeah, thanks to COVID.
I mean, so one good thing came from it, that we're able to all, you know, connect or whatever. I think Zoom created COVID. Like, I think, you know, like they were the ones who
Well, you know, they say that there's a pretty good chance that because of everything that's going on with COVID, that we're probably not going to go back to the old system where everybody has to drive into work and go work at an office and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
Because office buildings are really expensive. There's a lot of overhead. When you can do most of your work from your computer at home, You know, before employers were worried about, you know, not getting any production
productivity
done.
And now they realize what now a lot of people realize, said is yeah, like, if you don't have to commute and your workers get an hour more of sleep, I think that's the way it's going to be.
Oh, yeah. And then schools are going to be like, everything's on the computer instead of having to go into the classroom because, like, I think the government doesn't even want to pay for schools anymore. They're not doing a good job doing that anyway, you know, and stuff. So, I mean, they don't pay for them.
We do.
Yeah, we don't want, you know, funnel the money. Yeah.
Sometimes well, sometimes not so well.
Yeah. So anyway, I just think like, you know, that it goes on a little political thing, but it's just the whole point is that we're changing right now to doing everything through our computers and through I'm a little worried about that though, because
it's worked out for this show because Zoom has been a really good vehicle for this.
It works out for that, but like I mean, I would rather go to an office and talk with people and have like real communications with people than
Not me either.
No. But, I've done all my podcasts have been like since I started podcasting have been on Skype or Zoom. I mean, I've done, Jonathan,
it's not going to change for you because if you're going to be acting, if you're going to be directing, you've got to be on set.
Right.
That's what I'm saying. You can't do that from a computer.
I mean, writing I can do from the computer, obviously. That's always been the same.
Writing, editing, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah,
sure.
But like directing movies, I mean, we're going to do, I guess I can mention this anyway. We're going to do Scary Story Slumber Party through Zoom, part two, volume two. Rebecca will be in it as well as Sam and Samantha Marie and Julianne. Prescott. So it's wonderful that we're going to be able to do that because we can't get them all together a lot of times. It's really hard and it's expensive. So when you can do stuff like that, you know, it's wonderful. However, I don't want every movie pretty soon to be done through like a Zoom kind of thing. Yeah. I think it'll get boring and, you know, we won't, it'll lose the creativity of the now that
I think there's the balance. There is a balance. I think that this has, like Paul said, it's forced us as a society to realize that technology is viable and that people aren't just going to just fuck off if they're at home and be like, oh, you know, maybe they don't wear pants, but they're still going to be productive, probably more productive. I mean, like, I think it's that whole, I think it's that whole idea that like,
I'm not wearing pants now.
I'm kidding. I've got some on. Okay, this time.
I'm going out to Target after this, so I've got.
There you go.
You know, though I could go. I could go in my PJs. I mean, you know, it's Target.
But I mean, like, you could go to Walmart in your PJs.
The movie,
no,
you know,
Target is upscale.
You're missing. You're missing an opportunity here, as far as Scary Story Slumber Party 2 goes. We could do this with me, a la Kevin Strange, and put me in a wig and a dress and lots of makeup, and I could definitely do one of those roles.
You could.
Maybe for part three. You'll have to join in a topless pillow fight. Like, we've promised many people.
Okay, that's, yep. How are you, I'm excited to see how you guys do that through Zoom. I mean, you know.
We'll make it work. Yeah, I've done quite a few Zoom things with both of those ladies.
Outstanding.
So
I'm excited.
We'll figure it out. We're creative chicks.
The monkey is ready for it.
I'm going to let you guys all do your thing. You know, you guys can direct yourselves. You know, I'll just watch later.
Outstanding. All right, guys. Well, I guess it's time to wrap up. Thank you both very, very much for coming on the show this time and for indulging me in a little bit of Strangeville. And, yeah, we'll have to see what happens for next time.
I was actually thinking, Paul, like, because we haven't, you and I hadn't done one in a while together, you know, for a little bit. And I was like, why is Paul asking me to do this? And I'm like, he wants Rebecca on, but like, I don't think he can find a third person right now to do it. So I think that's why you asked
me.
Oh,
I was an afterthought.
No.
Oh, okay.
He was the first
person
he thought. But
definitely
he,
not.
He messaged me. I was the afterthought. He was trying to think who else could he get other than you to come on the show to watch this movie. And I think I was the only one he could think of at that time that would actually be able to watch it.
Hey, consider it an honor.
Get away with it. Well, I mean, it's not Hahnemann and this and the Five Riders, but I figured you'd survive it.
Well, Rebecca, tell us what you've been up to lately.
a little too much. I've already mentioned Holy Shit Man a few times. We are starting
which reminds me from the Indiegogo that's out right now. Everybody should check that Indiegogo out. But that trailer reminds me so much of a Kevin Smith. Now you got me going with a Kevin Strange movie.
Okay, so yes, Holy Shit Man, we do have an Indiegogo going right now. We just kind of did a soft launch just to make sure everything's cool. We do have a teaser trailer that is kind of our more sarcastic version of our trailer. We'll probably have a little more serious one. I'm also trying really difficult. It's really difficult right now, but we need funding for Carousel the Second. If you loved Carousel, so not Carousel, Carousel from Steve Rosensky with Duke the Sentient Killer Unicorn. Mm-hmm. Then we are doing the sequel. It's like my dream come true to actually be in this movie. It was like my favorite movie of last year. So we do have a Kickstarter going for that. And then in a week and a half, I'm going to start filming The Embalmers.
Yay. Oh, yay. So we're excited about that. Also, tell us about the podcast that you do.
I am on In the Mic of Madness. That is a horror podcast I do with Jerry Cortez and Brad Thornton. I also do SOBs Who Love SOV with some SOV darlings, Tony Masiello of SOVHorror.com, mm-hmm. Maddie Deering, who just directed Spirit Animal, Slade Shepherd. We just had Todd Sheets on our show last week.
We love Todd Sheets.
Yeah, yay. So we did Goblin. His least favorite nice. Movie, and he
really
that's how much he loves us. He came on our show to talk about Goblin.
That's his least favorite movie. I'm surprised. I would have sworn it would have been, you know, Prehistoric Bimbos and Armageddon City.
You need to listen to our podcast because we got him like deep on that one. But okay, yeah. Okay. So if you love SOV, man, look us up. We're on SOVHorror.com now. We've moved most of our stuff over there, and yeah.
Oh, you also started a new podcast. Well, not new, I mean, but you just started joining us for a new podcast. Tell us about that one.
I don't know. I'm on a couple different ones, aren't
well,
I?
Well, yeah, but like the one, like the one main one too is 80s horror films where
yes.
we're doing stuff with that.
Yes. So I did get to join in on, I didn't get to be on the Mutilator episode to get to be on Sleepaway Camp. I think we've got a poll. That is picking our back to school movie.
We already picked it. It's done. It's not what I was expecting.
Yeah.
But it was one I had to put up, and I almost didn't put it up because it's too mainstream. But I was like, you know,
I was pulling for Mary Lou, but
yeah. I was pulling for Cutting Class, actually. You know.
Well, that was my write-in vote. Right. And then once I was like, oh wait, Hello Mary Lou Prom Night 2, that takes place in a school.
Yeah. So then we ended
up,
so we're going to be doing Nightmare on Elm Street, the original, you know, which I mean, a lot has already been said about it itself, but just like Sleepaway Camp, it's very popular, you know, in a way. You know,
and it'll be fun to talk about it with a new group of people. So Julianne Prescott, Joe Gonsalves, Gonsalves, I can't say her name. The four of us. I've never talked about it with any of you, so it'll be fun.
Yeah. It'll be a fun thing.
Don't forget, you'll also be joining me with our new podcast coming out.
Wow, chicka, wow, wow.
Exploitation Sleazecast. And boy, if you thought there were fluids flying before, you ain't seen nothing yet. Ain't seen nothing yet. And poor Gary, I showed him a couple of the movies last time he was over here and said, these are the films about what we're going to be going. He's like, oh my God, I can't believe these things exist. I'm like, yes.
You should get Gary as a special guest on one
at
of
some
them,
point, yeah, some point. Yeah.
Yeah, that'd be great.
That should be a lot of fun.
So we've got Indie Film Cafe's got a lot of podcasts, but a lot of them are actually going to be leaving in November. So like we're going to be done with a lot of the podcasts. Then we come back in March because we're going to take a little bit of a break, mainly so we can get pre-production done for Supernatural Assassins and all the stuff that we're doing, which will be hopefully filming in March. You know, depending on the Indiegogo, we are going to be running on the next Friday after this is released. So the next Friday, we are going to be doing September 4th. We're going to be launching an Indiegogo that will be basically we're planning this to be huge. So let's, you know,
give us money. It's going to be cool.
Yeah. Rebecca's in in it, and Paul's going to be in it, and I'm going to be in it, and
give money, it gives you a huge clock.
Yeah.
Every cool person in indie horror, basically.
Yeah. It's got a huge cast, so yeah. You would think, like, with a huge cast, that if everybody promotes it and everybody gets it out there, who knows what will happen. But yeah, we are hoping for that, so let's fingers crossed that we're able to talk about that more, you know, when things start coming out and getting made. And the next Indie Film Cafe will be in, obviously, will be mine in, September. And Paul will be back for that. I don't have the idea yet. I mean, I know what I want. I've talked to Paul about it, but we don't know exactly what the film will be. So, yeah.
And I've already got my next one planned.
Oh, God.
He's like, excellent.
Oh, yeah.
So we're all excited. This is going to be this is actually so far a really fun year. I think
we're making the best of it kind of way.
Well, no, I mean, especially for the podcast stuff, it's been a pretty good, I mean, we've had a pretty good run for Indie Film Cafe.
Absolutely. And I have to say, Rebecca, you've been a great find. You really have. Yeah. You really helped us out a lot.
Thank you, Zoom, for allowing us to have Rebecca on here, you know.
Well, and thank you for having me.
Classing the place up like you do.
Yeah.
That's right.
Outstanding. All right, guys. I guess it's time to wrap it up. Thank you all for joining us here on Indie Film Cafe, and we will see you on the flip side. Bye.